Hello and welcome to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers. We usually speak with professionals. Today we're speaking with a professor. Shannon, I would love to kick it off.
Wonderful. Well, we are so excited to have a new podcast guest with us today. We are joined by Jeff Merrill. Jeff, I would love if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about where you work and the kind of community that you work with.
Sure. And again, thanks for inviting me to have this talk. I'm really excited to sort of share what little bit I know here about a couple of topics that we've talked about. But my name is Jeff Merrill. My title is Associate Director of the Learning and Organizational Change Master's Program at Northwestern University. So in my role, I have the opportunity to teach classes, so I'm officially a lecturer or instructor here. So not a tenured professor, so I don't do research, but I do teach. And the courses that I teach involves actually thinking about technology in learning and knowledge sharing within organizations. So I kind of eat, sleep, and breathe a good bit of this stuff professionally. In addition to that, the community that I manage. We have our graduate program has roughly 130, 140 students at any one time. And we have a community that is based on Jive software that is really the heart and soul of everything that we do for learning. So we make very little use of our learning management system for doing things like discussions and community sharing and running classes. We actually use community software, and we've been doing that for the last 6+ years, in part because we have students all over the country. Even though everybody comes in and meets face to face for classes, we have, the people will fly in for a couple of days to do classes. Our community is a way for us to connect everyone who is part of the master's degree program. So that's, again, been going on for probably the last 6 years.
Jeff, can I just ask you a clarifying question? Because I know folks that listen to these love to connect with the presenters or the podcast guests based on platforms. And so Jive with the split, there's JiveX and JiveN. Could you just explain which one you're on?
Yeah, we're on JiveN, on a cloud instance of JiveN. And roughly, I would say we're between, because we have people kind of rolling in and rolling out, right? They're students, so they will be part of the program for 2 to 3 years, and then they'll roll off, and we allow our alumni to come back in. So our community is between 250 and 350 people.
Excellent, great clarification, thank you. So when we talk with organizations about community, they think of it as a place for product support or a place for employees to connect. Can you share your thoughts around how the role of community impacts learning within organizations?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually in a very fortunate position here, obviously, since we can really sort of push that part of the equation. I have a bias here that I make the argument to folks that community is everything, frankly, in terms of actually.
We agree.
Good. All right. Podcast over. There's a couple of reasons I think I could get at that, because again, this is both from our experience in running the community our community's purpose is learning. The entire purpose is learning, right? So we don't have products to support. We don't have customers to support, in terms of, unless you look at our students as customers, but our outcomes that we're designing for here is learning. We've seen some success. It's helped differentiate our program. So so that's sort of one, bullet point, I think, in the value of learning and community. But if you go back to, when I teach the courses, one of the courses that I teach, we talk a bit about social learning theory, social learning theory is more than just people in an online space connecting with each other and talking about things. And one of the perspectives that comes out of social learning theory is this idea that, you know, learning or knowing something is much more than learning how or learning about. It's learning to be a particular kind of practitioner, right? And it's a social process that you're engaged in doing that. And I actually think the Community Roundtable is actually a really good example of that. I mean, right? So you've got practitioners in a particular area who are, you know, in your community, dealing with all of the ambiguities and challenges of being a practitioner. And I can tell you that every one of them would probably say that, look, you know, when I first became a community manager, maybe I read a couple of things about community management. I didn't feel like I could identify myself as a community manager until I could come in and sort of talk with my peers at that same level. So that's what coming to be is all about, learning to be is all about. So I think one of the opportunities that organizations need to remind themselves, be more in the forefront of their minds, is that no matter what kind of talent that I'm trying to develop, people need space to become that kind of practitioner. So if I'm in a consulting firm and I'm a junior consultant, you know, there's just a way of being as a consultant that I've got to learn how to do. And communities, and I'm talking about the online part of this, you know, can play an incredibly, you know, big part in helping that individual develop that identity by connecting with others and sharing stories and working through ambiguities. So pick any kind of practice area or capability that someone needs to build. It's way more than just, you know, learning the what or the how. It's, you know, it's all those subtleties about how to become that type of practitioner, or that type of practitioner in that particular organization, which also is, I think, is key. So for me, it really is everything. And I'm my role is, you know, as an advocate here, I think that to me would be the main part of the story that I would tell to organizations about the where they need to go with this.
I've got a kind of follow up on that. Just in thinking about the different types of employees and the ones that thrive in typical hierarchical organizations versus the type of person that thrives in an online community, it seems like those are very different kinds of people. Is that something that you found in doing your research? And if so, how does an organization reconcile that? They really need to support and promote people that they typically wouldn't be comfortable supporting and promoting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit, so I'll talk from direct experience in this. And a little bit in sort of the examples that our students bring from their own organization. So part of this is, I think, you know, recognizing that when we're talking about online communities, you know, they're most effective when there's some sort of distributed work going on, rather than everybody being in the same physical space, right? I mean, if you're in the same physical space, the same building, it's 50 people, you know, there are a lot of other things that you could do to sort of build that culture and community and sharing. That may make online stuff a little bit more secondary. But the more that the work is distributed or people don't see each other, the more that technology can kind of come into play with the face-to-face stuff that, then helps this cycle of development. But I think, you know, in our experience, we have people coming into the program, the graduate program, who come from all sorts of different comfort levels. We're using technology, different age groups. We've got, you know, people from late 20s to mid 50s. There's definitely a variation in people's capacity for, their comfort with, their competence in engaging in online activities, whether that's discussions or, you know, reflecting on their own learning. And so part of, I think the trick for us has been thinking a lot about how we build a safe space for learning. And that, frankly, is for us, it's something that we do both in face-to-face and online, right? So we see everybody all the time, or not all the time, we see everybody, you know, regularly. And so it's the culture of the, and you could say if we were a company, it's the culture of the company that we try and build a safe place for learning. So I think a piece of that is key, that there has to be some trust that the organization has built a safe place for people to participate. And then there are ways to nudge people into participating and allowing them to sort of seek their own level, right, and find their own their own pace for participation. But it takes work. And again, I think that's where community management or community managers are so key, because that's that's sort of the facilitation and social skills that every community manager I've met seems to have in spades.
While you were talking, I was thinking, and I'm going to maybe ramble asking this question because I'm not exactly sure the right way to ask it, but you were talking about your students and how they have really diverse backgrounds, age-wise, technology-wise, background-wise. But I was thinking, like, I was going to ask you the flip of that, which is, do you see sort of like 30,000-foot view of what tends to attract people to your program or to attract people to this kind of learning? Is there any common threads? It's a little like a little off base to the conversation we're having, but it's really interesting to me.
I think there's definitely something in the self-selection for people. So our you know, it's a master's in learning and organizational change. So it's a sort of an organizational change specialty for people who are very, very people oriented. So everybody kind of coming into this, and it's you know, if you look at our demographics, it's roughly 70% female, again, that age range, cross industry, so you know, 20-25% not for profit, and the rest sort of business and a little bit of education. They're all coming from a very strong center of, we want to understand the people side of how change and learning happens. So I do think there is, I would guess, right? My, you know, this would be more of a guess than a proven thing. But my guess would be that, you know, because of that, people are a little bit more attuned to participating and caring for others, right? And sharing with others, because that's sort of how they were built in the first place. And we're also pretty upfront about sort of how we run things. So I think that's a piece of it. You know, as they come into their graduate experience, one of the first things that they do is introduce themselves by answering three or four questions about themselves in a space where they have to post and post some pictures. So we're doing things like, you know, where have you traveled recently? It's sort of not school stuff. It's more, hey, we want to get to know you as a whole person. And that comes immediately as they join the graduate program. So I think there is something about the people come in, they're very people oriented, and then we sort of hit on that as they come in. It's an interesting question, though.
No, that makes total sense. And I, even hearing you talk about it, sounds so much like a lot of the people that are attracted to community. We say a lot that you really have to like people to be a community manager, because if you don't like people, if you don't want to help people, you're not going to be very good at the job. Like, it just, like, it's frustrating. There's a, you know, you have to have that sort of underlying, like, you want to be a positive change. So that resonates.
And I do, and I would add to that too. I think, and I really like about this too, is I think there's something about not just liking people, but I think the really good community managers that I have known really appreciate the diversity of voices. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, if I can equate it to teaching, it's, you know, it's easy to stand up in front of a class and have a discussion and know that there's two or three people who are always going to have something to say, right, and just let them go. The hard part is finding those people in a, you know, when you're in a live classroom is getting those people who don't normally say something to get up and actually and speak. So I think community management and facilitation like that are there's a lot of similarities in sort of your thinking about how what you want to achieve, right, by being in the role that you're in.
Yeah, I definitely see the parallel there. It's really interesting to think about. I'm going to kind of change gears. I was doing my podcast homework, and I was reading about some of your recent work with your graduate students focusing on, like, it's called There is Hope thinking and how it aligns with organizational learning. It wasn't, like, calling that concept that wasn't something I was familiar with. Can you explore the idea of There is Hope with us and share how you think it relates to community management?
Yeah. So this was a blog post I wrote that was something of a rant. I'm not sure what set me off on it this time, but it was basically asking, you know, reflecting, thinking out loud about the role of people like me who are into community and are learning professionals. You know, what role do we have in addressing some of the social issues that really clearly intersect with and impact businesses? So, you know, this whole thing about, you know, bro culture, the Me Too movement, the consequences of tech companies not really paying attention to how they can unintentionally encode bias and racism into algorithms and products and platforms. So the list can kind of go on, right? I mean, if you just read the news, it's all of this stuff that's sort of happening. So, you know, what's our role as community-oriented learning professionals in addressing that, and not just thinking about, you know, how do we get people to learn more about, you know, a particular new technology or answer questions, you know, about our products. So there are two examples that out of the class that I teach that sort of gave me some hope that people get community in a different way and what that can contribute to the organization. And one came out of a student who shared the story of how so they live in a large metropolitan area. There was a racially motivated shooting that happened. And everybody in the building, you know, this is a pretty large organization. There was really not a whole lot of interaction or talking about what had just happened, even though a lot of people were obviously upset about what went on. But there was an online space, an online community where employees had been participating in, where they began to actually share and talk about their feelings and emotions about what had just happened. You know, and why did it happen, and how are they feeling? So the online space really was the only space where that came out, and where there's hope for me there. I mean, two things. So one, I think there was something, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this with the student, but there's something obviously about the way the community managers helped create that space where people felt safe to be able to have that kind of conversation and then let it go on. But there's also something positive if I'm a, you know, community manager and I've created this space and you know, I see that people are having this conversation and one of the outcomes of that kind of thing is that people are beginning to recognize that other people feel like I do. And that's a positive thing, you know, in situations like this, that, you know, I may be walking around having this thought in my head. And I'm thinking like, oh, I'm the only one who is upset about this or is feeling emotional about this or is confused about this. But then you go into an online space and you see that others are feeling the same way. There's something about that kind of momentum that builds out of that can be very positive. So that was sort of one hopeful example. And the other one that I shared was from another student who had done some work in LGBTQ studies. And brought up this idea of queering the space, which comes out of queer theory work. It's basically, you know, intentionally members of the community intentionally subverting some norms with the idea of it being a positive thing, right? That there are other voices that need to be heard here. That can add to the conversation and maybe avoid unintentional harm to all members of the community or some subsets of the community. So subverting the norms as I understood the way he was talking about this, was one way of doing that. And what was interesting about it is that this particular person is an emerging leader in the organization, 30s, director level, obviously sort of gets the way networks and communities work. And just the fact that someone can bring that point of view to say, the outcome that I'm looking for is to be able to have multiple voices heard in our communities, and that a little bit of subversion now and then might be a very positive thing. And so I need to figure out how to create space for that. And it's a very, very difficult challenge to how to walk that line. But just the fact that he was asking those questions and thinking about that as a positive thing, to me is a very, sort of gives me hope. So I'm looking for, this started me just sort of on the hunt for looking for different ways that people within organizations or across organizations are using community to tackle some of these larger issues that are affecting the cultures of business or affecting business that have just seemed so intractable to deal with. We were talking before we began the podcast a bit on this. I'm starting to connect with other people. At this point, I'm kind of looking for examples and starting to connect with other people who are sort of interested in the same thing. So it's a bit of my own personal journey things here that I'm after, but I'm one for looking sort of the positive examples.
If there's someone who's listening to this podcast right now and would love to give you some examples, what's the best way to do that?
Ping me on Twitter would be one way. Would probably be the best way.
Okay.
And you can find me at Jeff Merrill on Twitter.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure that's
Or if they're members of the CR, the Community Roundtable, I'm there as well.
That makes it easy. So let me ask you one more question about the work that you do and just try to get a sense of how people can connect with you. But the work you do at Northwestern is pretty unique. And what advice do you have for someone who's interested in pursuing this field of either learning within organizations or community as a field of study?
I do think what I really appreciate, and I've said this to all of the members in the Community Roundtable and Rachel and you, Jim, and everybody that's sort of connected there, that I really do appreciate the professional organizations like yours that are there to really be a magnet for the profession. So I frankly encourage my connections are sort of in the learning space. I say the Community Roundtable is a great place to connect with other people to just sort of deal with those ambiguities of community management. And part of the appeal of it, and I'll extend this to sort of my general thinking, is that, look, if I'm a learning practitioner, the fact that I can go in and interact with people who are dealing with communities of external stakeholders, of customers, right, is a positive thing, because I learn from, practitioners learn by kind of crossing disciplines, or you get innovative by crossing disciplines. So I don't just want to go, I don't want to be with a bunch of people just talking only about learning. I would like to be in a space where communities are being stretched to do all sorts of different things, because I'll learn a lot from that. So I think there's something positive about the mashup there of people from different disciplines. And I guess that's the thing I would encourage to anybody who, once they kind of move into the profession or the practice of community management, is to continually see if you can look to other areas for inspirations of how to approach things. So, for example, massive open online courses. There's all sorts of challenges there. So MOOCs, right? If you're designing a massive open online course, all sorts of challenges of scale and connecting people and having, learning happen. What is it that you could learn from the way people have design different types of MOOCs that might be applied to what you do as a community manager. You know, not necessarily running a MOOC, but there might be techniques or strategies or things that they've learned from MOOC, from the people who design and deliver MOOCs that could be applicable to your to the field. And the same thing with things like, you know, from, look at crowdsourcing or look at, you know, activist communities. Just sort of as you begin to look around outside of just the pure space of wherever you're situated, you begin to get inspired by other ideas. So my encouragement would be to sort of look for, look for inspirations on how to solve challenges, not just through best practices and the experience of others in your own particular space, but to look at it, to look outside of that as well, and incorporate that into your thinking, because that's where really kind of cool things emerge.
That sounds fascinating. I think the idea of...
I'll just give one example. I mean, we actually just did have a roundtable discussion in the community roundtable with a learning practitioner from a large company who shared this incredible design that they had for developing female leaders in their organization. And it was a mashup of like four or five different models that they had pulled from different areas, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was and having impact. So this was, SAP, I forget the name of the program that they created, but it was incredibly creative. In explaining it, you could for those of us who have kind of done this for a bit, you could recognize that they were pulling from all sorts of different areas to solve this problem. It wasn't just they weren't following a script or a model that came out of the learning world. They were mashing up all sorts of different things, and it was hugely innovative and impactful.
So we are reaching the end of our time, sadly, because this has been a great conversation. This is my favorite question, and I feel bad for anyone that listens to the podcast and they're like, she says that every time, but it really is. It's my favorite question. We love to ask people what their superpower is.
We did this once, and those are people who kind of know me, hopefully they'll validate this, but I think mine is kind of just being chill. I think that plays well in the role that I have here, both as when I have the opportunity to teach, and when we're doing things in the community. You need to sort of disconnect in some way from all of the craziness that's going on, and allow things to emerge without panic. And I think I've learned over time to just kind of be chill on that. So I would throw that in there.
Well, Shannon, I think we might need to use the reggae music to wrap up this podcast. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us, and we will look forward to seeing you in the network.
Great, and thanks to both of you, and appreciate all of the outstanding work that all of the members of the Community Roundtable continue to do.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers from the Community Roundtable. We'll see you next time.